Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the FY 2022 earnings conference call of Adani Green, hosted by Investec Capital Services. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. We have with us the management of Adani Green. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Apoorva Bahadur from Investec. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Rutuja. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. From the management, we have with us Mr. Sagar Adani, Executive Director, Adani Green, Mr. Kaushal Shah, CFO, Mr. Rajkumar Jain, Head Business Development, and Mr. Viral Rawal, Lead IR. Without taking any more time, let me hand over the conference to Mr. Adani and team for their remarks, post which we'll open the floor for Q&A. Over to you, Sagar bhai.
Thank you, Apoorva, for a brief introduction. Thank you, friends, for joining this call.
This is Kaushal.
I'm Kaushal here, the CFO of Adani Green. Warm welcome to all the participants for this earnings call to discuss the operational and the financial performance for the year ended 31st March 2022. We have uploaded the earnings presentation on our website, and we hope that you would have a sufficient time to go through the same. Let me walk through some of the recent updates, followed by an overview of our operational and financial performance. On a year-on-year basis, the operational capacity has increased by 56% to 5,410 MW with the persistent efforts of our team. Over and above, there are additional 1,600 MW which is being operational. But because of some technical reasons, we are not able to declare official COD. Overall capacity as we speak is 7,200, and we are able to sell the power on a short-term basis on this. Further, the total portfolio now stands at 20,434 MW, with the latest PPA signing for 150 MW solar project with Punjab State DISCOMs. That is on the capacity side. On the strategic investment from the IFC, I am pleased to say that Abu Dhabi-based international holding company is in the process of investing $500 million as primary capital in AGEL. This will be a long-term investment in India as the country is driving much innovation globally, especially in the green energy sector. AGEL expects to play a significant role in unlocking India's complete green energy potential and thus adding the value. This investment will help AGEL deleverage its balance sheets, boost its credit rating profile, and thereby helping reduce the cost of capital and further support future growth. I'm pleased to say that yesterday we had an EGM, and this resolution is passed, so we are expecting this money to flow before 15th of May. Another important milestone, as you are aware that, you know, the last year we have done Asia's first construction facility of $1.35 billion. There is a further addition that AGEL has raised $288 million construction facility, and thereby increasing the total construction rollover pool to $1.64 billion. The extended pool of liquidity strengthened the AGEL strategy to fast-track the development of its under-construction asset portfolio. The facility is a green loan certified by ISS ESG and will have a significant contribution towards UN SDG 7, which is affordable and clean energy, and SDG 13, which is a climate action. You know, this is in line with what we have told to our investors friend that we have a fully funded growth plan for entire 40 GW which we are planning, and this is one of the addition to that. Now I shall brief you about our progress and important milestone towards our ESG commitment. In line with our commitment and well ahead of our initial goal, 100% of EGEL's operating capacity is now single-use plastic-free. So this is a major milestone which we have achieved. EGEL has also featured in CDP India Disclosure Report 2021 as the only company in India in renewable sector disclosing greenhouse gas emissions in all the three scopes. And reaffirming the ESG commitment, EGEL has won the Golden Peacock Award for Sustainability for the year 2021 in the renewable energy category. Over and above, as I have briefed in the last, we have done a benchmark in the governance also. The board, the audit committee is fully comprising of an independent directors. So board structure is completely changed and majority of the committee, we have an independent directors heading and participating into that committee. Now let me brief you about the operational and financial performance. The robust capacity addition and the best-in-class O&M practices have led to a continued impressive operational and financial performance for the year ended 31st March 2022. If you look at the CUF, you know, which has improved by solar CUF, improved by 130 basis points year on year, and the wind CUF has improved by hooping 400 basis points to 30.8%. Over and above, you know, we have been able to achieve 100% plant availability and the improved grid availability of 99%. All of these we have achieved in the midst of COVID pandemic, which was a hurdle for many of the, you know, our peers. Wind CUF improvement is backed by technology advance and more efficient newly added wind turbine generators, improved plant availability of 97%, and improved grid availability of 100%, and improved wind speed. The sale of energy has increased by 72% to 9426 million units, backed by robust addition of 1940 megawatt renewable capacity over the last 1 year, along with improved solar and wind CUF. Supported by the strong performance, EGL's revenue from power supply has to 3783 crore. And EBITDA also from the power supply has increased by 60% year on year to 3,530 crore. And EBITDA margin has improved by 100 basis points to 92%, which is, you know, normally 200 bps higher than our immediate peers or competitors. The cost cash profit has increased by 48% to 1,854 crores. So a substantial cash surplus which is available, which we can use it for our growth purposes. If you look at the PAT, which has increased by 169% from 182 crores to 489 crores. So in conclusion, the last fiscal year has been very eventful for us. We successfully completed acquisition of high quality SB Energy portfolio, which has been truly value accretive as evident in the overall improvement in the operational performance and further strengthening of our counterparty profile. At the same time, we have fulfilled our commitment to fast-track greenfield renewable capacity development. Further, we are aiming to integrate newer technologies that will improve the efficiency of power generations while also lowering the cost of electricity. In FY22, we have also made considerable progress on the ESG front, and our commitment to light up a sustainable future is only growing stronger as EGEL continues to get global recognition of its ESG efforts through the rating from the multiple prominent ESG rating agencies and significant ESG-focused investment. So with this, you know, I would like to stop here, and the floor is open for the questions if you have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Rahul Modi from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you and congratulations, Sagar and Kaushal Bhai, for a great set of numbers. So just a couple of questions on the scenario going ahead. So we, as you mentioned, that out of the 5.5 gigawatts we've commissioned, we've got another almost 2 gigawatts, which is almost there. So for the balance 13 gigawatts, so when do we expect the capacities to get commissioned over the, whether it's 2, 3, or 4 years, and how much CapEx is spending for the thing?
Hello? So hi. So basically what you should do when, you calculate, every year you should consider average 3 gigawatt of capacity addition. As a ballpark figure, this is, I'm talking about only greenfield. If we do, anything above inorganic growth, that will be an extra. So that is one thing, 3 to 3.5 gigawatt is a ballpark figure which we are going to add every year. And the capex figure every year we are targeting about, 20,000 crores every year for this, over the period of next 4 years. So you can consider that around 80,000 crores will be likely capex over the period of next 4 years.
Okay, that's very helpful. One more thing, if you could throw some light on off late, post-COVID and during COVID times, we've seen that Chinese solar module companies have actually reneged on contracts, at least on the price contracts. And that's caused a lot of delays. You've almost seen 20-25% plus kind of a cost escalation from their side. So are you facing any delays from that front? How are we tackling that situation?
So yes, there have been, hi Sagar here, there have been instances across the board of managing contracts and not following through with the prices and terms and conditions that they had signed to. Not for us, but for everyone. So, of course, we have also faced that issue. From a delivery point of view, although we have been able to manage deliveries for all the projects in time, because we've been able to commission what we've commissioned over the last 12 months. So, deliveries have not been an issue for us, but price certainly has been. And we've seen projects go up in overall total project cost from about 5 to 7%. But we have also been able to sell a lot of the power on the short-term exchange. And as you're very well aware, prices right now are very, very accretive. So we've been able to sell a lot of that power at, 10 rupees per unit, 12 rupees per unit, 7 rupees per unit. And we've been able to offset a lot of those cost increases by enhanced revenue before commissioning of the project.
Okay, that's great. And the last question from my side, of the 38,000 odd crore debt for FY22, so how much would be the floating rate debt which can probably get impacted if, on any variation or upward movement in the interest rate?
So, majority of our debt is a fixed coupon. So we are not expecting any major movement to our debt, which is currently at around, on an average, is around 8.8%. So we don't see any major movement in that particular. In fact, we have a plan to, reduce some of the debt by having, the domestic bond issuance and other things. So current some of the loans which are at little higher rates will also bring down the overall cost.
Right, sir. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mohit K from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon, sir. And congratulations on the capital raise and a very good year. So my first question is the you said that 1-2 gigawatt is waiting for, capacity addition. What is this technical thing which is stopping us from declaring commerciality? And is it going to, is there some penalty under the PPAs which can be imposed to us? I do understand that we are selling at a high price, that can offset, but still.
So there's no penalties under the PPA. Hi Mohit, thank you for your question. There's no penalties because still we are well within the PPA timelines for all the projects, and we are not overshooting the legal PPA date by any means, because our projects were commissioned significantly earlier than when legally we are expected to complete them. There are a few technical low voltage related issues here or there, which is why we are not able to give full legal COD, but we're able to still sell a significant portion of that capacity on the exchange today. So that's the it's a techno legal issue, wherein there is some technical issues in transmission lines here or there in some small chunks of that overall capacity. But at the same time, we also need 100% completion for being able to declare it as the full plant being commercially COD'd. So once those small issues are rectified, we should be able to, which is only 2 to 3% of the total capacity, we'll be able to declare full COD on the plant completely.
Is there a compensation payable by these discounts in case this is delayed for, let's say, theoretically?
No. So as long as we supply to them within the PPA timeline, which is something that we are confident we'll be able to do, there's no penalties of any sort.
Understood. Secondly, sir, we are raising 38 billion, right? That's a very decently large chunk. And we also have a Holdco bond of 55 billion. And there's a large amount which is supposed to be repaid in FY25. Is this 35 billion which you're raising right now, is there a plan to reduce this Holdco debt, or do you think the FY25 you will take care of it later, and this will be used for equity requirement for our portfolio?
So this will primarily go in for growth and the 38 billion, and that is what will accelerate the development plans of AGEL. If you see the Holdco debt, the way it is sized is via an NPV of future equity cash flows. So as soon as we accelerate the portfolio and we grow faster and better, the capacity for drawing on Holdco debt significantly increases as well. So we feel like, in fact, in FY25, we will be able to, there'll be a significant amount of cash flow coming from down beneath as well. So we will pay back part of Holdco debt and part of it will continue for after. But of course, it depends on the situation at that point in time in terms of the opportunities in front of us, in terms of various different things. But we have a senior debt of RG1, which is due for refinancing in FY25. So we'll be refinancing that as a senior debt. But the Holdco bond, part of it will pay back, part of it will continue, depending on whether we have any acquisitions that we can do, or if there is space for drawing that capacity for further growth. So we'll take a decision at that point in time.
So given everything, is this 38 billion sufficient, do you think, for developing your entire portfolio of 20 gigawatt, or do you think we need to raise equity at some point of time?
No, so 38 billion will be fully funded, because as you very well would be aware, 38 billion is in addition to the capacity that we have for raising Holdco debt and the significant free cash flow to equity coming from our plants every single year, which number rises astronomically year on year. So we have we don't expect or foresee any equity raises after this.
Understood. Lastly, sir, what was the money paid to acquire the SoftBank acquisition asset? Can you just let us know the amount which you paid? I think 79 billion of debt has come from SoftBank acquisition. I can just tell the equity portion, equity amount which you paid to the company, and are there any legal issues or issues with the PPA which we can foresee, there could be some issue in terms of installing the entire capacity of 5 gigawatt?
So Mohit, for the acquisition, the equity which we have paid roughly is 5,300 crore. So that was the consideration which we have paid for the equity. and the remaining was the, you know, the overall enterprise value, which we have decided. This is what we have agreed. The date which has come up, now that enterprise value is inclusive of entire CapEx, which we are going to do to complete the project, because only 1,700 MW was operational. The remaining CapEx was pending. So that was what we have agreed with them, was the enterprise value, out of which the equity which we have paid is 5,300 crore, and the remaining, which we are going to, you know, incur over next 3 years, 2 years for the making project operational.
With regards to the execution of PPAs, we don't foresee any legal trouble. In fact, what we are seeing now is that there is a, because of the increase in power demand in the country, there is a resounding demand for PPAs. And of course, the 2.5 rupees, 2.7 rupee PPAs seem to the DISCOMs as a very, very cheap alternative to the 12 rupee, 13 rupee power they are buying from the exchange today. So DISCOMs are looking very strongly to sign PPAs as quickly as they can. And because of that, we don't expect any issues with any of the PPAs in that portfolio.
Understood, sir. Thank you and all the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhruv Muchhal from HDFC Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. So two questions. The first is on the commissioned capacity of 5.4 gigawatt. What will be the annualized EBITDA run rate? So the reported number is about 3,500 crores. But I understand part of the capacity is, you know, for half of the year or say part of the year. So is it possible to share the annualized run rate?
Yeah, yeah. So run rate EBITDA will be roughly around 6,000 crores.
So for this 5,000, the commissioned capacity of 5.4?
No, so the operating capacity is 7.2 gigawatt?
Yeah. 1 minute, huh?
Okay, we are including the capacity which is almost commissioned, but because of the technical...
It's operating already.
So it's already operating, yes.
Okay. The end of, okay, I was wondering, coming from the end of Q4 number. So including the 1700, which is almost commissioned, operating already, the run rate will be about 6,000 odd crores. The EBITDA, annualized EBITDA run rate will be about 6,000 odd crores.
It will be 6,200 crores for 7,200 megawatts of operating capacity.
Got it. All right, so this will be reflected in FY24. Got it. And so the second question, more on the strategic side, is from reports you understand that the larger group is planning to also venture into the green hydrogen side. So just to understand, given the requirement of solar and wind will be significant there, also plus some of the other technologies. How does the structuring happen? Does Adani Green get to play a part in that hydrogen segment, or will it be the other groups? I mean, the solar or wind energy will be supplied by Adani Green, or does that happen the entity which is putting the hydrogen plant?
So the hydrogen project is happening. The hydrogen project is happening in an entity underneath the Adani Enterprise Limited, which is Adani New Industries Limited, ANIL. I'm sorry, we cannot speak through the management of that, because that's an independent business who will work out their independent business plan and their independent structuring in a way that suits them best, you know, even from a taxation, etc. point of view, because there is some GST complications and stuff like that. But independent of how the contracting takes place, I definitely see that AGEL will have a very key role to play, either in the form of supply of power or in terms of providing the management services under a contract to that entity, because the AGEL is where the expertise for solar and wind lies, and that entity will definitely rely on AGEL's expertise for executing whatever they need to do in terms of green energy.
Okay. So the second part, so first I understand probably you will be setting up the plant and probably supplying the power. The second part is as a service provider for setting up the plants and operating them. Right?
No, so whether or not the plants will be set up on AGEL's books or the books of ANIL is more a taxation structuring matter, which we cannot speak to, because it's housed under a different entity. But but ANIL, I'm sure, will announce their own plans in due course when you will have better visibility on these items.
Got it, sir. Sure, sir. Thank you so much, sir. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Dhruv.
Thank you. Participants who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Nikhil Nigania from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, sir. Sir, wanted to understand what is the impact on returns on the project, especially given the inflationary environment, whereas wind turbine prices are going up and interest rates also expect to increase. What is the impact that you're seeing on your expected returns, especially on large projects like the manufacturing project?
So, Nikhil, there is a little bit of a dip in equity returns from what we would have if we had set up those projects a year ago versus today. Of course, there is an impact, but from a capital point of view, there's two aspects to how we look at it. One, that we are able to set up the projects significantly because, you know, we have the land ready, we have the evacuation ready, and we have had all these years of expertise to be able to commission the project significantly before when the PPA deadlines are. So we're able to recoup a lot of these additional costs by additional power sales in either exchanges or otherwise, which offset the increase in cost of construction of the plants. So we've been able to do that, which is something that we believe we will continue to be able to do. So that's for the offset of increased cost. And with regards to the increased interest rate and the interest cost, we are able to raise funding in the market today as a company at one of the most competitive rates from any of our peers. We with the position that we have with the significant, but I was just saying about the increased interest rates, and we're able to raise funds at a lot of. Of course, the spread has increased a little bit for us as it has for other people, and that would impact our equity returns marginally. But we don't see a significant difference because of that.
Understood, sir. So second question I had was on the line of receivables. So receivables, as you know, many investors have seen that as a challenge given the health of Indian DISCOMs. So any improvement you see on that front, or does that continue to be area of concern for generators in general for India?
So SECI and NTPC have historically always paid on time. They did continue to pay on time through COVID, and they still do continue to pay on time every single month on month, with complete regularity. That's where, on an overall portfolio basis, that's where more than 80% of our portfolio is. So we're very comfortable and confident about that. With regards to particular state DISCOMs, two of which we had an issue in the past, which was Tamil Nadu and Telangana, both of them we have been able to just recently receive significant chunks of money from. So Telangana, we are 100% current now, both in terms of receivables of principal as well as the late payment surcharge, the LPS. With Tamil Nadu as well, we have received a significant amount of money, about 400 crores. And we are also about at, I think, down from at about 1.5-2 months, down from 8 months earlier. So we've in fact seeing a significantly better receivables position from the state DISCOMs as well compared to a year or two ago.
Correct. Good to hear that, sir. So one last question from my end. There were two regulatory or macro situations. One was regarding an habitat area of an endangered bird in Rajasthan, which was stalling construction of a lot of projects. And second, regarding the MNRE list of approved suppliers where Chinese suppliers weren't there. On both these fronts, do you see any challenges to existing pipeline projects, or not a big challenge for Adani Green?
For Adani Green, particularly, it's not a challenge because, as you know, this issue has been to the fore since the last year and a half to almost 2 years now. It's not something that is new. In the last 2 years, after this issue was raised and after this became an issue for the sector overall, we were still able to execute about 2,500 to 3,000 megawatts in the Rajasthan Jaisalmer area, because our plants fundamentally are outside of the GIB area, and that is not something that is a matter of an issue or a concern for us. There are a few additional approvals that we now need procedurally to do some of the further work that we need to do, but I don't see that as stopping the work that we are doing. Of course, we'll have to go into an additional loop of approvals, If managed properly, then it should not be any sort of a problem. With regards to the ALMM, the certification that is required for Chinese modules, our projects in the pipeline will not get affected because we've made adequate measures and adequate needful in terms of what we need to source. But we do see that as a significant risk factor for the sector overall. But we've made our arrangements to that effect. So it should not be a problem for Adani Green's pipeline.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gole Peng from Fullerton Fund Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you check on slide 42 on the right-hand side column? There's a mention of, it's about the funding going forward. In terms of timing, what kind of timing are we looking at?
Hi, sorry, can you please repeat your question?
Okay, let me turn to the slide again. So, slide 42, on the right-hand column at the bottom box, there's a mention of future dollar bond. I think this is referring to the restricted groups going forward, right? So that you can recycle the capital for more investment.
Again, I'm sorry. I'm not sure what slide you are referring to or what number you're referring to. But
I think you turn to slide 42 of the presentation for the results.
So we don't have. We only have a 40 slide presentation for the earnings. Are you referring to some different presentation?
I got this from the website. Maybe I. Yeah,
so you
download
can
the wrong.
Typically the dollar bond issuance that we will have going forward is typically for recycling some of the Indian debt that we borrow at the senior debt level at the project level, and the business model or the methodology through which we do it is we used to typically raise Indian funding, or even if it's international funding from international banks, at the construction stage, and we replace that with long-term dated international bonds through the life of the asset. So that is something that must be what you are referring to. And yes, we do have a program year on year to be doing that on a consistent basis as our assets come online.
So it will be similar to the RG1 and RG2 kind of framework, right?
Yes, they will be more similar to RG2 than RG1.
Okay. So for this financial year, how much is the cash flow going from the two RGs to the whole co?
Just let you know in 1 second.
Oh, thanks.
It will be a total of about $60 million being upstreamed to the Holdco from both the RGs.
This is the Adani's portion, $60 million.
$60 million, yes. So going up to the holding company.
Okay, maybe just one last question from me. When you increase the ECB amount, because the amount is from 1.3 to probably like $1.6 billion, right? From 1.35 to 1.64. What's the reason for the increase? Because it's not a huge amount in that sense compared to the total.
We are setting up a new greenfield project. The project cost of which is $400 million. So we are the debt portion of which is $400 million. So we are raising $400 million of additional debt to fund the capex of the greenfield project that we're executing right now.
Right. It's a solar, 100% solar plant.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. That's all for me. Thank you.
Hybrid 450.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bharani Jaikumar from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Am I audible?
Hi, yes, you are.
Yeah. Good evening, sir. My first question is, I just want to know the quantum of projects won since April 21. In bidding, say either from SECI or from the states by Adani Green. That is essentially FY22 in that financial year.
It's 600 megawatts.
Okay, because this number is smaller than the number we used to have in the earlier years. Just trying to understand the impact on the 600 megawatt of projects due to this ALMM list. Someone had also alluded to it in the earlier question. So essentially this 600 megawatt projects need to procure modules only from the list approved by the government, if I'm not wrong, correct?
So out of this, we need 150 megawatts that need to be procured only from the list, and the other 450 we are open to procure from outside.
Right. And so essentially any bit that is coming up from now would require it to be adhering to that list, if I'm not wrong.
That is correct. That is correct, yes.
Sure. So with the industry seeing close to, say, 10, 15 gigawatt of awarding even in FY22, do you think we have enough capacity? Of course, we don't have enough capacity, but what kind of delays in project execution would happen because of this? How is it going to be feasible from the government side to ensure timely project execution?
So I think there is definitely a lot of ramp up going on significantly on the manufacturing side by a lot of people. Certainly we are doing it. And it becomes a question of how much capacities will come online, manufacturing capacities, by what point in time. Sure, there may be a few months of mismatches here and there, but we do think that with the award of the PLI, and with, you know, all of these things, that a lot of these projects would have modules available in the near future.
Okay. So then the next question is, at what point in time or at by end of each year, how much do you think would be the module assembly or manufacturing capacity in India according to you, say by end of 23, end of 24?
I think by about FY25, we should reach about a 40 gigawatt per annum capacity in the country.
Okay. Right now, it would be around 10, right?
Right now, it would be around 10, yes. You're right.
Okay. So, essentially, we are dependent on the capacities coming up due to the PLI schemes.
Due to the PLI schemes and people setting it up independent of the PLI scheme as well. There are some parties who are setting up module and cell facilities independent of PLI schemes under various state government incentive schemes and stuff like that. So, those are coming up independently. And PLI schemes are more kind of integrated capacities which are coming up.
Right. Sure. The second question is on the expected amount of awarding activity by either, say, SECI or states. We have seen a little bit of a slowdown there. So what would be the expectation the next 1 or 2 years, FY23-24?
The slowdown has mainly been on account of COVID and on account of non-clarity of rise in power demand because of the uncertain scenario caused by COVID. But now I think it is abundantly clear to all the state distribution companies as well as the central government companies that power demand is significantly increasing in the country, and that it will constantly and consistently continue to rise, which is why we are expecting very, very, very significant auction capacities coming from state DISCOMs and SECI and NTPC this year. While I cannot speak through a certain specific number because I cannot speak on behalf of SECI, NTPC or the state DISCOMs, but we expect that number to be pretty significant.
Okay. Since you alluded to the power shortage scenario, since you mentioned we are selling infirm power in the short-term market, why do you think even despite that there is still shortage and power load shedding? Is it because of the time mismatch? Because solar would be selling probably in the daytime and probably the peak demand is in the evening. Is it because of that?
So that's a part of the reason, but there's also the quantum of demand is significantly higher than the total quantum of supply. So there is an overall issue also that even in the afternoon times, if you see, prices are still 8 rupees, 10 rupees, 12 rupees, even after selling all this power on the exchange. So there is a gap in the afternoon and there is a much higher gap in the evening. So the gap is just there consistently throughout because of the rising demand.
Okay. And you would be selling in the GTAM market or in the GDAM market, sir?
We sell on both.
Could you give us a little bit of color on why you would prefer one over the other? What are the merits or demerits?
I mean, if you want details around the GTAM, GDAM market, then, you know, we're happy to set up a separate call, I think, and for I'm just conscious of the time of everyone on the call right now. And, you know, you can reach out to our management and to Viral, and he'll have the relevant team from our side walk you through the nuances of both markets and the pluses and minuses of each.
Great. Thank you so much and all the best.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nirav Shah from GC Holdings. Please go ahead.
Hey, good evening, sir, and thanks for the opportunity. Most questions have been answered, just a couple of them. Sir, in your opening remarks, you mentioned that you'll be adding around 3 gigawatt every year. But say for this year's exit capacity, would that also include that 1.6 gigawatt because that's a spillover from last year?
Yes, overall, you know, this year we are talking about 2.2 gigawatts and plus spillover of last year.
So you'll be adding 3.8. So you'll exit that close to 9 gigawatt?
We should be around 9.2.
9.2 gigawatt. Got it. That's fine. And just the second question is on our group press release at the time of, you know, we or IHC investing $2 billion in our group, we have also mentioned that both IHC and Adani portfolio are looking at strategic opportunities in India, Middle East and Africa. So is Adani Green also looking at outside India opportunities in that sense? Or it's more pertaining to the other two companies?
So Nirav, our focus mainly Adani Green particularly remains India and the opportunities in India. There are a lot of different opportunities that do come up from time to time outside. When if it is not one profitable, second material in terms of size and volume, we do not participate in it. If there is an opportunity which comes tomorrow in some other place which is both profitable and significant in terms of volume, then we may look at it. But the focus, the predominant focus remains India and is expected to continue to remain India as we go forward.
Got it. Thanks a lot and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Subhadip Mitra from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon and thank you for the opportunity. My question was a little bit more on the lines of, you know, how do you see the transition of the solar module technology, you know, from a monopole to a TOPCon versus NGT? You know, how do you see these technologies maturing, or is there any preference that you have in terms of your own strategy towards, you know, which of these technologies with regard to your own manufacturing plant?
So we think that a year or two from now, TOPCon will start to become the mainstream, and 3 to 4 years from now, HJT will start to become the mainstream from a Chinese module manufacturer's perspective. Now, looking at a lot of different scenarios and a lot of different constraints around the access and availability and the cost of these technologies in India, we are in the process of evaluating, you know, in detail the pros and cons of a monopoc versus a TOPCon versus an HJT for an investment that we are making on the manufacturing side as we go forward. And, you know, we're still under that evaluation. We don't have, we've not made a clear decision on that, but we should be in a place to be able to make a decision on that very soon. But in principle, TOPCon and HJT do seem interesting and attractive, and while there is a few complications that come with it, there is a merit in terms of you know, going for those technologies as we go forward.
Understood. So my understanding is that, you know, transitioning from a monopole to a TOPCon is doable and easy to do, whereas HGT probably is a completely different you know, setup. So if one goes and one doesn't.
Topcon is, while yes, not as different as HJT, it is significantly different still. So there is a couple of additional process steps involved for which the expertise and experience is not there in India right now. So one has to weigh that very carefully before making an investment decision on the manufacturing side, because you don't want to set up a technology which you can't run effectively going forward. So that's the thing that we need to consider. Yeah.
Correct. So if one goes in one direction in terms of setting up a manufacturing technology based on one tech, it would be difficult to suddenly transition into a completely different technology. That's what you're trying to say, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Got it. Got it. Second question is, you know, I think one of the earlier questions you were, you know, speaking more in detail about the kind of peak demand scenario that we are seeing today. And just wanted to get your perspective on, you know, the way demand is growing today, and it seems to be more on the peak side and probably more during the evening hours. Are you sensing, you know, a higher demand for, you know, future tenders, which would be on, you know, solar plus battery tech or solar plus storage? Those kind of bids would now kind of become the mainstream?
So solar and wind will continue in terms of, you know, the volumes, because India, the way we look at it and the way we look at the landscape is India as a country, and, you know, of course, with different nuances in different states and different DISCOMs, all of them need everything. They need solar, they need wind, they need thermal, they need solar with battery, they need solar and wind hybrids, they need hybrids with battery, they need hybrids of renewables with thermal combined, which was the RTC bid, which was brought out by SECI. All of these different sort of bids will be required. And, you know, of course, a particular DISCOM, because of their own nuances, might need one more than the other. But, in general, the basket of solutions will be needed to be brought out by SECI and NTPC for solving the demand needs of all the DISCOMs. But everything will have to go on in parallel, basically.
Understood. Last question is, you know, between a solar plus battery and, you know, a hydro pump storage kind of a solution, is there any preference between the two? Do you actually see any one of them getting more economical with time?
Between which two, I'm sorry?
So you have pump storage
Correct.
Versus solar plus, you know, battery
Oh, correct.
storage.
Yeah. No, so again, I think that both will have their own uses and niches. I think if we want a gigawatt level scale stable power, then pump storage is the solution right now, because solar plus battery still at a gigawatt scale, sure, you can do 100, 200 megawatts here and there, but at a gigawatt scale, that becomes difficult to implement, and in terms of both availability and cost. So we see today, on an independent basis, pumped hydro being a little more competitive compared to solar plus full battery. But of course, with the cost curve of batteries coming down, that equation may change in the near future.
Understood. Thank you so much for answering the questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Girish Achhipalai from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I just had a couple of questions. So, one was this comment made around the debt, and you said a large portion of your debt is fixed cost. So when you say that it's forever fixed cost, I mean, is it like you have some 3-4 year arrangement and then it rises, or how does it actually work? Or is it till perpetuity, I mean, till for the life of the debt, it will be 8.8 only? And second was, what is the new debt costing you for the new projects? I may have missed that, sorry.
So in broadly, I mean, we can have specific numbers shared with you offline, but just from a guidance perspective, there's about 20-25% of our debt, which is in perpetuity fixed cost, which is basically the RG2 type construct, where we have 20-year fixed cost paper. Almost entirely all the debt that we are issuing going forward is in that construct, where for the life of 20 years or 22 years, the cost of debt will be fixed, which is the senior debt that we raise at the project level. We also do raise some debt in our projects from some of the Indian banks. Those facilities are more fixed in nature for a 1 year rolling basis. So the cost of those facilities is fixed for a year and is linked to some sort of an RBI rate. But from an overall percentage perspective, it's a much, much lower percentage in our portfolio. We will also be issuing NCDs domestically, which will be fixed term paper. As we go forward, we are also raising some holdco level debt, which is again also fixed for a period of 3 years and gets refinanced after 3 years and is again fixed for a forward period of about 3 to 5 years. So that's the basket of different debts that we have. But more or less, what we have today is fixed, more or less, just broadly speaking, and what we will have in the future as well will continue to remain fixed for the tenure of the PPA. Because that's an underlying capital management philosophy of Adani Green, where we do not want to introduce debt risk to our equity investors. So that continues as a fundamental philosophy. From a going forward cost of debt basis, we typically are raising at 7.5 to 8% levels for the projects that we are closing going forward with the Indian banks, and about 8.5% to 9% circa rates from international bond raises.
This is a fully hedged basis.
Fully hedged basis.
Okay.
And so just to add to what Sagar Bhai has told, you know, during the construction period, we open the letter of credit in favor of supplier, which is being done at the 50 bps, and they discount, whereby, you know, our interest cost is 4.5%. So, you know, almost for a period of 9 months to 12 months, we have a cost of around only 5 to 5.5% during the greenfield construction. So this is the most economical way of optimizing the overall debt portfolio cost.
Okay. And Sagar Bhai and Kaushal Bhai, the other question was on M&A. So when you are looking at some of the recent deals that are happening, whether it is Shell or Tata Power, etc., I mean, are the deals that you are, is the M&A landscape becoming a more challenging in terms of finding reasonably valued deals? How is it right now that you are looking at some, is the inorganic growth aspiration probably lower than it was, let's say, a year back for you guys in terms of finding the right deals? And second part of that question was not from an equity raising perspective, but are you getting a lot of incoming inquiries in terms of maybe, participating with you? I mean, Total was a big transaction which has already happened, but are you getting similar interest again and again, as the renewable story plays on?
So two questions of yours. First, M&A opportunities, we are very clear. We have been historically and we continue to be very clear that we will do inorganic growth only when two conditions are met. One is that the asset quality on the ground is fundamentally robust and very, very solid, because we look at these assets as 35 to 40 year assets and not just a 20, 25 year PPA life. So that continues to remain as a very, very important gating item for us. In addition to that, we also make sure that the value at which we're able to do it is something that is finally accretive to equity, because no point growing megawatts when value does not enhance. So those are two aspects that we are very clear about, which we've historically been very clear about as well, which is why you will have seen that we've done very specific, particularly chosen M&As where we feel that there is an opportunity for a significant amount of value creation. That is something we'll continue to do as we go forward. There are a lot of platforms available in the market who want to sell, but we will be very choosy and we will pick the right ones that make sense for our enhancement of equity value. That is number one answer to your question. Your second question was, again, can you please remind me? Inward interest into our platform. And so for that, we have always been, and we still today continue to get a lot of inbound interest. Abu Dhabi's investment via IHC of $500 million into Adani Green has been a second step, so to speak, for us after Total. Still, there is a lot of inbound interest, but our platform does not need equity to grow. So we are in a position to be very careful in terms of who we choose to be our partners as we go forward, because we don't need the money, but the strategic aspect and the strategic rationale of joining hands has to make sense for us. And that is something that which is the case with Abu Dhabi, and is something that we will continue to always look for as we look at other alternate opportunities as well. But from our point of view, we are not actively looking to raise equity because the platform does not need it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Apoorva Bahadur from Investec Capital Services. Please go ahead.
Right. So just I'll quickly ask one last question, I think, before we close the call. So just wanted to understand, we are hearing that SECI is going to come up with RE plus thermal blending tenders. So are we looking at that opportunity? Any idea on what size that could be, and will we be working with the other group entity on this?
Answer to all of that is yes. The size is a reflection of what the bid comes out and what we're able to win. But we will try to look at significant quantum in those bids as we go forward.
Great, great. I think that's all from our side. No further questions. We can close the call. Rutuja?
Sure. Would management like to give any closing comments?
No, thank you everyone for joining, and we appreciate your time, and we look forward to building on whatever we've been doing at Adani Green. You know, it's a very exciting story. It's something that we are very well prepped for, and we will continue to execute the way that we have over the last couple of years, because at the end of the day, that is what matters. And setting up capacity on the ground and growing our portfolio, our megawatts, our free cash flow, and our EBITDA remains the focus from a management point of view. We'll continue to build on that and hopefully deliver consistently exceeding performance year on year. Thank you everyone for joining, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On behalf of Investec Capital Services, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.